Drive Time on RT Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When it comes to pensions, performance counts. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension.
Now, the Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee, has signed bilateral treaties with the United Arab Emirates on extradition and mutual legal assistance today. The Minister said she believes the two agreements will support tackling organised crime and drug gangs. The Minister joins me now live from Abu Dhabi. Helen McEntee, good evening to you.
Good evening, Cormac. Hi, how are things?
Now, before we get to the treaties and the Dublin Task Force, which I want to ask you about as well, you've heard this afternoon the news that the Sinn Féin leader, Mary Lou MacDonald, will correct the Doyle record regarding her statement last week concerning her party's Senator Neil O'Donnell, who sent inappropriate texts to a teenager. Now, this is something Fine Gael has sought. Once done, though, will that be the end of the matter?
Well, look, I think it's entirely appropriate that she would correct the record. The whole point of the statements last week was that we would get clarity on quite a number of very serious issues, in particular in relating to child safety. So I think it's really appropriate that she does correct the record. And obviously, if there's any more information or anything else that needs to be corrected, that would be done. But, you know, we've had quite a number of different issues have arisen in the last number of weeks. And to me, what's been made very clear that this is a party that does not have the appropriate structures in place and that really is not fit for government.
Okay.
But, you know, to your original question, yes, I think it's absolutely appropriate that she would correct the record.
OK, we did ask for a spokesperson from Sinn Féin, but none was available this afternoon. Can I ask you, Minister, about the extradition agreement and the legal treaties you've signed with the UAE? This is to zone in on criminal figures who may be hiding in that jurisdiction. How quickly, can I ask you, will you begin the process to extradite key criminal figures from that jurisdiction to Ireland?
Well, firstly, this has been a process that's been underway for about a year since I brought this to Cabinet over a year ago. There's been really positive cooperation, not just between myself and my colleague, Minister Al-Nawami, who's the Minister for Justice here, but our Gardaí working with police here, as well as our Justice Departments. The signing today is really important step, and in the coming weeks I hope to have this approved by the Dáil, and similarly they'll have a process they have to go through. So this will be finalised and completed extremely quickly. Without, you know, I can't and I wouldn't get into any individual cases. If there were to be anything to happen next, what will happen is the DPP will issue direction to charge a person, so an individual, and if they are not in the country, Gardaí will then seek an arrest warrant from the High Court, and if that's granted, then they will present it here, and obviously authorities will act on it here. So that's the process.
Well, you say obviously the authorities will act on it there, but we spoke with Michael O'Sullivan, formerly of An Garda Síochána, and Nicola Tallon, crime journalist, on this programme on Friday about this very issue. They made the point that sometimes extradition from jurisdictions like the UAE can involve political horse trading. So what happens if the UAE authorities do not comply?
Well, I think what's really important is that there has been such cooperation to get to this point. So this has not been Ireland looking and dragging for the UAE to come into a treaty with us. The UAE have been extremely proactive, extremely engaged. We've had quite a number of delegations back and forth, and they are really eager to put these structures in place, because this means that there will now be an official structure in place that makes it easier, much quicker and more efficient for everybody involved here. So if you have somebody who has committed a really serious crime at home and they think that they can simply flee to another country or to the UAE here, that there is no hiding place for them, that they won't be kept here and they won't be harboured here, that there will be an extradition treaty in place that will allow them to be brought home and taken home to face charges at home.
You don't envisage the UAE, for example, handpicking who is allowed to go into this extradition process and who is not?
Well, look, this is similar to any other type of treaty of this kind. While this is not something that we enter into regularly, to be honest, this is the fourth of its kind that we've entered into. There are very clear structures in place, and I would fully expect, and I fully expect that they would comply with and that they would engage in good faith, because we both really do share the same objectives here. We're talking about people who have cause nothing but misery in so many communities across our country and beyond. And they have impacted, you know, and I'm talking generally because this applies to everybody. This will apply to any person that has committed a serious crime and thinks that they can then cross into another country to evade justice.
I know.
This will mean that any person who has caused this misery, that they can be
will
brought
not be
home.
Able to hide. How and ever, yeah. though, much of the commentary is surrounded around the Kinahan crime figures and the crime gang who are in the United Arab Emirates. What happens if they move to another jurisdiction like Russia?
Well, look, what we will do is we will continue to work with other countries. We will continue to work with other agencies to tighten the net and to close any door possible. When I said that there are a number of treaties, so obviously the European arrest warrant applies automatically for any country in Europe. We have arrangements in place with the UK, with the US, with Australia. So where we need to go, and we will make sure that we work with other countries, that we work with Europol, Interpol, with our colleagues in the US.
That may take some years.
To continue to just close doors.
That may take some years. I mean, this extradition treaty that you're now signing today has taken some number of years, has it not, to get into fruition?
Look, it's taken time, and as with any legal document like this and any treaty, it takes time. It's probably happened much quicker than might have been the case, but that is because there has been such cooperation between both sides. But I really do think, and I hope it's clear, that this sends a very, very clear message that there will be no hiding place for criminals, that we will continue to close doors wherever people go.
Okay.
And, you know, what we're talking about here are people who want to travel to live particular life in a particular place, and the more doors we close in those types of areas, the much more difficult it becomes
you
for
say,
them.
There's no hiding place. Okay. Can I ask you about the Dublin City Task Force, the plan to revamp Dublin, which has been published to much fanfare or commentary at least. It involves a plan to deploy 1,000 extra Gardaí in the city. The question I would have for you as Minister for Justice is, where are those extra 1,000 Gardaí going to come from when we're losing more than we're hiring from the force?
Well, firstly, what I want to see is more Gardaí right across the country, and that includes in our capital city and in the city centre itself. So, I mean, that's an objective that I have always held and that we're working towards. And our numbers are improving and they are increasing, and the number of people going through our Garda College has significantly increased in the last 2 years. And what I'm doing is putting in place new structures and putting in place a group of people that are looking at, or have put in place a group of people looking at, well, what can we do differently to try and put in place radical measures to boost our numbers even more. So, I mean, my objective has always been to increase the numbers right across the country, and that includes in our city centre. But what I think is really important, but also really welcome about this report, is that it looks at safety in the whole. So it's everything from, yes, making sure that we have enough Gardaí and that they're supported and equipped with everything that they need, but it looks at dereliction, it looks at
waste. It does, we'll get on to that, but how long, on the 1,000 extra Gardaí, Minister, how long will it take to redeploy or deploy or hire an extra 1,000 Gardaí for this revamp of Dublin?
Well, I think it's clear that it's going to take a number of years to increase our numbers to the target of 15,000 and then go beyond. And I've always been clear that we shouldn't just get to a 15,000 target, that we need to go beyond that.
How many years?
The Commissioner said 18,000. Well, as quickly as possible. I mean, that is my objective, that
but,
we would
well,
reach those numbers
as quickly as possible.
When
you plan to revamp a city, Dublin City, for example, you surely have to have a timeline that's fixed, do you not?
Well, I think if you look at any of the projects that are being proposed, whether it's around dereliction, whether it's around simple changes that could be done by the local authority, some of these are already in train and can be done much more quickly. Other parts of it, if it includes planning, if it includes, again, hiring people, if it includes moving services potentially, I mean, there's a massive focus on the fact that we have a huge number of vulnerable services in our city centre. That doesn't happen overnight.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the task force itself has set out a number of different timelines, and importantly, you know, we can publish a report and it can sit there, or we can act on it. And the Taoiseach has said very clearly that the next step will be to put together an implementation group to look at all of the recommendations and how best do we implement them.
In a way, that's exactly what the opposition is saying that you've done here. They say, in terms of fixing dereliction in Dublin City Centre, that was a great idea. It is a great idea. They say it was a great idea in 2015 when it was mooted in Dublin City Council. But it hasn't been acted on.
Well, with all due respect, a lot of the people who are calling on us to make these changes are people who have objected to proposals and plannings for many years within the city centre. So, I mean, we can talk about it or we can actually act on it.
But I mean, that's the point they're making. You didn't act on it.
because so many of the people who have called for these changes are blocking planning applications or extending or delaying things.
Is that the reason it wasn't done?
Let's be honest about this. There's a lot of changes that would have taken place before now if they hadn't been objected to or there hadn't been massive planning objections.
Which ones?
So, you know, the same people. Well, within our city centre and O'Connell Street,
so
and other areas,
a specific
Moore Street
project
and many
in mind.
Others as well.
So you mentioned Moore Street as... But that's that has historical significance, is it not? And that's why there were objections there.
There's a number of different reasons, but if you were to look at... the overall development in our city centre, it hasn't happened quick enough.
Because of objections.
I absolutely, there have been objections over the last number of years and they have slowed down progress. And that's one part of it. As I said, the overall revamping of our city centre, it's looking at the fact that our city is different. And this is not just for Dublin. You see this in any major city post-COVID. The number of people coming into our city centres, the number of people working there, the change in dynamic, all of that has to be addressed. And you can't just address it in one way, be it through an Garda Síochána or policing.
And you
have to look at all of these different measures.
Given the ballooning cost of the Children's Hospital, are you sure you can bring this in under $1 billion?
Well, look, we have to start. And the start was making sure that we had this plan and that we can now act on it. And the most important thing now is that we do act on it, that we do try and implement measures as quickly as possible, where there are longer term objectives, that we work through them and that we work collectively. I mean, we all want the same thing here. We want our capital city and the city itself to be vibrant, to be, you know, a place where people can live and work and travel and study and do all of the things we want them to do and for us to do in our capital city.
Okay.
That's everybody's objective here. And I think we have the bones to be able to do everything we need to do to get to that point.
Can I ask you a very quick question in relation to election speculation? Because I know you've been appointed instead of to replace Heather Humphreys as deputy leader of Fine Gael, but you're also the Minister for Justice. Can I ask you about speculation over the weekend that Jerry the Monk Hutch is considering declaring his candidacy in Dublin Central in your colleague Pascal Donoghue's constituency with the aim, he says, of unseating, well, this is speculation, Sinn Féin leader Mary Lou MacDonald. What is your reaction to that?
Well, look, I think any person can put themselves forward and can put themselves on the ballot paper. I think anybody would have to be aware of the significant scrutiny in many ways that comes with it, but people are open to put themselves forward.
What would you say to voters who consider voting for him?
Democracy. Well, look, every person has a decision to make and every individual decides and makes that choice themselves. And I think people will have to make up their own mind when they see who's on the ballot paper and who's not.
OK, Minister for Justice Helen McEntee and Deputy Leader of Fine Gael, thank you very much indeed.